Blog Talk Radio.
Recruiting knowledge, and Carrie was.
I think he's with us, actually.
Is Carrie alive?
He sure is.
Oh, well, look, there's Carrie. Carrie was in the enviable position of being in Coleman Coliseum for the basketball game last evening, which, by the way, kind of a big deal to beat Kentucky. Even in a down year for Kentucky, I'll still take a win over the Mild Cats every time on the hard court. So, looking forward to hearing your takeaway from the game.
It was great, man.
you can
do
better.
You want details, right?
I would like some details. I think it's one of the few games that I have sat through the entirety of this year without being angry or wanting to throw something at the television or feeling like I was frustrated with Coach Grant. I thought we had good flow. Team looked energized. Seemed like Coleman Coliseum was popping pretty good. Crowd definitely impacted the game. And Calipari gave us really big props after the game. I don't know if you had a chance to hear his comments, but he gave Anthony Grant and the Crimson Tide every bit of credit that they were due.
Yes, he did. I did hear those comments, and I have a lot of respect for Coach Cal. I know a lot of Alabama fans consider him some type of cheater or whatever, but to me, and please don't take this as blasphemy, to me, he's the Nick Saban of basketball. And that goes from recruiting to his process to his facilities to everything. And he certainly did compliment Alabama after the game. He said Alabama gutted it out. We didn't. He said it got tough in there, and we didn't respond, and they did. And he even went so far as to say that he remembered some games at UMass where he enjoyed being on the winning end of games like that, where his team got out-rebounded and shot below 40% and still found a way to win on defense. And Coach Cal has never been anything but a gracious loser. The two times Alabama has beaten him, which are the only two times in Coleman Coliseum that Anthony Grant has faced him. He's 2-0 against Cal at home. But you know, getting back to the game itself, the first half was, again, a struggle, as it was Saturday at the Texas A&M game I also attended. The first half was a struggle. Alabama went into the locker room down by 9 points and came out and started the second half on a 12-1 or 12-2 run, and got right back in it, and it wasn't great offense by Alabama per se, but some people started playing their roles a little better than they had been on the offensive end, and the guy that I really want to give a shout-out to is Nick Jacobs. Here's a guy that had had pretty much nothing all year until a week ago tonight in Starkville. He's now had, like, three pretty good games in a row. And for the first time, I saw Nick fight on the offensive glass. And Nick got a couple of putbacks and tip-ins. And then when Trevor Lacy cramped up after being slammed to the floor on a potential three-point play, Kentucky was allowed to select the Alabama player to shoot the free throw when Trevor couldn't shoot it. And they selected Nick because he'd been hitting about, you know, Shaq-type numbers. And he stepped up there and drilled the free throw. So, and Levi Randolph had another good game. Trevor Belfort had another good game. The team showed a lot of fight. And here's a team that went up to Missouri and played well for the first, I don't know, 30 minutes or 40-minute game and then just ran out of gas. And all of a sudden, they've now won four in a row in the SEC, and they're sitting at 4-1 with a winnable game in Knoxville Saturday. But even if they don't win Saturday, they've got a game next week at home against a pitiful Arkansas game that's very winnable. So at the very worst, they should come out of January 5-2 in the league, and they actually have a little bit easier schedule in February. The schedule makers were just about as kind to Alabama basketball this year, guys, as they were Alabama football. This is one of the best teams Ole Miss has ever had, and Alabama only has to play them once this year, and it's at the Tad Pad, but it will actually be considered a quality loss if Alabama doesn't win. Alabama gets a pitiful Georgia team twice, a pitiful Arkansas team twice, an Auburn team that is good, better than they were last year, but still not great, twice. Alabama's got a chance to finish in the top, at least the top four in the SEC based on the schedule and based on getting good old Andrew Steele back, who they are now 10-1 with and 2-5 without.
Now, that's the astounding statistic to me, is that they are 2-5 without Andrew and 10-1 with him. It's not the kind of thing that you can prop up your chances of an NCAA tournament berth on, but it is the kind of thing that the committee will look at and consider, particularly if we continue to win with him in the lineup and it looks like he's going to be healthy for a tournament run. I'm yet to convert. I'm yet to be to move over to the we have a chance at making the big dance side, but I know a lot of Bama fans after last night's win, a lot of people are starting to smell what Coach Grant is cooking, and we needed that. He needed that. The team needed that. The Crimson Nation needed that that win to turn us around and get us a little positive energy. I'll disagree a little bit with you on the scheduling being so favorable. Any season where you get both Florida and Vandy as away games, both of those are very, very difficult places for us to steal wins away from. And just like with Kentucky, even when Kentucky's down, they're a tough out. Even when Vandy or Florida are down, they're tough to beat at home. And Florida is certainly not down this year. That's a very, very good basketball team.
No, they're probably a Final Four team, but that's another quality loss. This is the worst team Vandy has fielded in the last 8 or 10 years. Yes, they were able to play Kentucky very tightly and Ole Miss very tightly, but that's because they were hitting threes at home, and they have not consistently done that this year. Alabama has done a much better job this year defending the three-point shot than in years past. I admit, Blip, that Nashville is a difficult place to win, but Vandy is fielding a team right now that is slightly better than Mississippi State. Better, but slightly.
Well,
will they play over their head and hit 43s against Alabama? Maybe. But this is the most winnable trip to Nashville Alabama's had in many a year.
I hate that court. Man, I hate the layout of the court. And it seems to me like over the years, we get jobbed more by the referees in Nashville than any location in the SEC.
Agreed. But they are very beatable.
Let me put my crimson glasses on and start complaining about the refs before the game's even played. Thomas, I know that you have been somewhat removed from basketball because you have been in Senior Bowl land, and I'm curious to know what interesting news you have to report from Montgomery, Alabama.
Well, Montgomery would be the Raycom game, but Mobile, it's been a good week so far. Just to jump back to basketball, with Alabama being one of the last four out, according to Joe Lunardi, or first four out, excuse me, before the Kentucky game, I haven't seen his updated bracket. Is that changed, or what's going on there, if either of you know?
I do not know.
I don't think he's updated. I can tell you that our RPI went from 59 to 53, which, given some of the jaw-dropping losses earlier in the season during that 2-5 skid. Sitting at 53 for our RPI is much better than I would have forecast us to be at. And by the way, guys, that Villanova win from earlier in the season.
I was about to bring that up.
All of a sudden looking pretty shiny because Villanova just knocked off the number 5 Louisville Cardinal. So that win may end up being a feather in our cap at the end of the season that was when we took it down, I think a lot of people kind of shrugged and went, Nova's not that good this year. Not so fast, my friend. That may end up being a fairly quality win. And you know, the best thing for Alabama basketball moving forward, everybody needs to get on the UK train. We need for Kentucky to get hot and rattle off 9 or 10 in a row so that that looks like a better win come season's end as well.
Absolutely.
And I saw a tweet from Dick Vitale. Today predicting that based on their schedule, that Kentucky will do just that, but rattle off 9 or 10 in a row. So you're right. We all need to get into Kentucky camp now. We need to stay in the Villanova camp, and we actually need to stay quality loss wise in the Cincinnati camp. So
yeah.
That buzzer beater there, that buzzer beater at Cincinnati was heartbreaking. Is there an excuse for Dayton or Mercer? No, there's not. Or Tulane? No. Although Tulane, I'm not sure how the game came out, but Tulane was giving Memphis fits last night. So
well, a lot more, it seems like, a lot more parity this year. You don't have, like we did last year, a Kentucky juggernaut. Now, I will say, that's a dang good basketball team they've got up in Syracuse with the Orangemen. That might be my pick for this year's juggernaut basketball team, but seems like there's a lot more parity. And if we stay healthy, knock on wood, with Musa Gay and Nick Jacobs stepping up. And to me, I would love to know what you thought. You'd mentioned Nick Jacobs specifically, and it seemed like very early in the game, Nerls Noel got up and threw one down sort of in Nick's face and hung on the rim just ever so slightly and kind of swung his body into Nick. It seemed like Nick kind of bowed up, and from that point on, you know, he played like his manhood was being threatened. Did you get that sense?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. And I do remember that play. He definitely posterized him. But, you know, Nick's teammates have really been on him to be more aggressive, especially on the glass. Nick is probably only really in true life about 6'7", 6'7", and a half. And Andy Weigel, who is the basketball equivalent of Scott Cochran, has done a wonderful job with Nick on molding and sculpting his body and helping get rid of some baby fat that was there last year. And granted, Nick played very well last year. Up until the Mississippi State game, everybody was saying how much better Nick was last year than he was this year. Well, finally, we're seeing a sophomore, Nick Jacobs, that's the lights come on, it looks like. And it was so funny last night. Noel obviously watched film because he knew that Nick goes left. And Nick is finally learning to go right a little bit, even though he's a left-hander. Nick's improvement is a key. And also, we have to give a shout out to Musa Gay. It's like Cecil Hurd said, if you had Musa Gay scoring the first basket of each half last night, you probably own an island somewhere. But it wasn't the scoring so much as it was blocking 5 shots and getting 5 rebounds. Musa Gay on the defensive end is coming into his own and proving why Alabama signed him. Musa Gay had a block late in that game last night on a key possession by Kentucky. And I'm not just talking about a block, but I'm talking about a volleyball spike. And it was his 5th block of the game. And, you know, and he also altered some shots, okay? When their guards penetrated, he didn't block every one of them, but he altered 3 or 4 that might have been 2-point baskets and weren't, and he blocked 5 that you don't know if they'd have been 2-point baskets or not, but Musa Gay, to his credit, is slowly but surely becoming a force on the defensive end.
His defense, I think I know the block you're talking about, where he chased that little guard basically down the lane and threw the ball back in his face, was one of the prettier plays I've seen this year. Admittedly, I haven't watched a lot of basketball, but that was an eye-opener for me. I had just gotten back from a senior bowl function and only caught the second half last night, but that one I was like, huh, that's a good sign. So I absolutely agree with you.
Well, let's segue a little bit if we could. Absolutely.
Let's segue over to the Senior Bowl because I really want to hear your impressions, Thomas, particularly of the Alabama guys, but also of the other SEC guys down there.
Sure. I've been down here. I want to give a quick shout out to Phil Savage, the new director of everything. It's been seamless. It's been great. There are more people involved, but even with so many people involved, so much credentialed media, I've been able to get in touch with their media guy almost at the drop of a hat. But in terms of how the squads look, I haven't been overly impressed with the South quarterbacks. Some of their ball placement on, you know, long passes, their long ball, has been not very good. I've had to play dodge the large, angry receiver trying to make a catch on more than one occasion at practice. But the Alabama guys, it's hard to scout Carson Tinker. Let me say, I mean, he's the long snapper. He's there. He's a great kid. He hasn't messed up any snaps that I've seen. And the special teams unit has been very entertaining because the kicker has been uncorking 60-yard field goals left and right, and the punter will kick it either into the moon or will kick it 65 yards. It's just been really interesting to watch. In terms of the other three, I've seen Michael Williams in person, and he's a big guy, but watching him on the sideline practicing with a bunch of other tight ends from around the country, you get a sense of just how monstrous he is. He really looks like a man amongst boys in blocking drills. I watched it and just started laughing a couple of times because he'd go up against a guy with a pad because they were only in shorts. They were in shorts, and it's just been real light stuff. And you just watch the guy go flying. And then he gets into the passing one-on-one drills, and he shows good hands. I mean, he's never going to be Rob Gronkowski. But if you can do a five-yard down and out or a five-yard down and in or a five-yard stop and turn and box out a linebacker or a safety, which he's going to be bigger than every linebacker or safety in the NFL, that's all you really need to do. So Williams has had a good week. Nico Johnson has been really impressive to me. He looks good. He's been in Scott Concord's system for 4 years. He looks good, but where he's really shined, he's always been seen as the run support guy. He comes in on running downs. So if there was one thing he had to prove this week, it's that he can cover the pass. As y'all both well know, going back to the Rob Gronkowski thing, Wes Welker, the slot receiver and the tight end is becoming a bigger and bigger part of NFL offenses. So not only do linebackers have to do what Ray Lewis did for so long and come up and just punish running backs, but they now have to drop into coverage, know what they're doing, and have the athleticism to run the defense, to get into deep middle if they're running a Tampa 2 or whatever the defense is called. And Nico Johnson has been able to do that. He had a couple of astonishing pass breakups where he's doing his normal 6-7 yards off the line lineup thing, and you watch this tight end do like a 3-yard curl, and Johnson comes tearing up and knocks the ball away. And the route was well-timed. It wasn't one of those things where the quarterback was half a step late. It was Johnson got there. So he's been able to display some pretty strong skills in terms of pass coverage. And if there was a question he needed to answer to move up in the draft, it was his coverage skills. The one guy I'm kind of dogging on is Robert Lester. The first day of practice, they're doing passing one-on-ones, and he just whiffed on a crossing route, and by the time he caught up to the wide receiver was 35 yards down the field. But to his credit, he's rebounded. He's doing well. He's a big safety. I didn't realize how big he was until I actually watched him work with the safety and DB group for the Senior Bowl. So he's recovered nicely. He's proving that he's pretty rangy. But the thing that stood out to me is that he's consistently led the defensive backs and safeties through drills. It's been a consistent thing where he'll go out first. He'll be the guy that listens to the coach and does it once to show everybody and then gets back in line and then does it full speed. So I think even though he has shown some deficiencies in extreme ranginess in terms of coverage, the leadership is going to shine through for him. I mentioned coaches. I really want to give a shout out, and I'm going to have an article about this coming up on Bama Hammer probably tomorrow morning. The South squad is coached by the Detroit Lions staff, and they're going about their job in a very professional way. They're in people's faces. It's not one of those things where, oh, we'll kind of put you through an NFL practice. You know, we'll let you run around for the fans and then sign autographs. No, their wide receivers coach, I watched him bitch Ryan Swope out for not doing something hard or not doing something the way he wanted him to do it. And that's been a pretty common theme. If you're not pulling your weight as a defensive lineman, as a defensive back, as a wide receiver, as a whatever you are on the team, and you're just kind of lackadaisical, you're going to get lit up by someone on this coaching staff. So I really, as a person in the media, I don't appreciate it as much, but as a fan of football who wants to see exhibition games played professionally, like played well, played professionally, I really have been very, very happy with how the Lions staff has been conducting themselves throughout this week. Kerry, you mentioned other guys in the SEC. Gillisley from Florida. He's been a good running back throughout. I actually have had a lot more fun talking to Stephon Taylor from Stanford. He's a character. I wish him all the success in the world. And then it's just been, you haven't seen a lot of blocking drills one-on-one for the offensive line, so I can't say about the SEC linemen. But overall, the SEC has been showing out. If you picked up your copy of the Fresh Register today, there's DJ Fluker on the front page, and scouts loved his measurables. So not only are SEC players competing at a high level, particularly the Alabama players, but some of the bigger SEC players, like a DJ Fluker, have been getting rave reviews for just pure measurables. But it's been a good week so far. Did you have a chance to see the Raycom game? Because I missed that, because the Senior Bowl has been spinning up crazy for the past week for me.
Well, they blur together for me, so obviously.
I did not see it, but I spoke to someone last night that worked the game. And he said Damian Square was injured and couldn't play. But he said that Carson Tinker looked good all week down in Montgomery. And he said that the one catch that Kelly Johnson had in the game Saturday for 17 yards was a very nice sideline route where Kelly was able to get the ball and get his feet down, and that Kelly blocked pretty well all week. But did I see the game? No, I just spoke to someone who worked the game.
I was actually in Tuscaloosa for the national championship celebration, so that whole game set up. For me, it was national championship celebration, turn right around and zip off to Senior Bowl stuff. So I completely whiffed on everything Raycom game.
Yeah, thanks for staying for the Texas A&M basketball game, Thomas. Appreciate the support.
Well, it's how I roll. It's good stuff, even though that first half was painful.
Did you say for it, really?
No, but I'm going to say I did for the support aspect. I was with my parents. I had to get home.
Oh, that's weak sauce right there. Guys, that will segue into the
roll tide.
The parade, I think, is one of, if not the best recruiting platforms we've had available to us in a while. That's not to say that Nick needs any more recruiting weapons. But why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about recruits who are in town to see the parade, how we finish out this class, what, if anything, has changed since last week, and we'll close out. I think Legend's coming on at 9, but With Bird being sick like he is, there's just, we never know. We'll take it to break real quick and be right back on BAMS Radio.
So, what makes BAMS Tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom designed tents for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy. Or call 251-247-1169 to order.
Bliff, AG, and the Bird
take on the world
with BAMS Radio, broadcasting globally
about Alabama football.
Roll Tide, roll!
Love Van Hagar too, but primarily love Van Halen. Nothing, just silence. Come on, guys.
Yep.
Get blood flowing. It's okay. We are T-minus 2 weeks and counting to signing day. I do want to speak to some of the loyal listeners who have been with us for a long, long time in regards to signing day. Last year we had made some promises in regards to Fax Cam Girl, and that is still up in the air. A lot of that will depend on Bama Bird and how he is feeling. We have talked to Fax Cam Girl. We have talked to the Furnace. Some of those options are still available to us, so we shall see. If I had to guess right now, I would bet that we are not going to do Fax Cam Girl and probably just going to lay low, do our usual 8 o'clock show on signing day, and just revel in the fact that we will likely seal the number one or number two rated class yet again.
Well, that's kind of saddening, but I understand.
You know, it is, but by the same token, understandable.
Absolutely.
And never say never. It's what's amazing to me is that Fax Cam Girl and some of her friends have actually come to us and said, we kind of want to do this. Which is cool. We'll see. We would certainly like to know that we're going to do it well enough in advance that we can promote it, let people know, you know, phone a friend, that type of thing, and hopefully we'll get the kind of traffic that we had last year on the site, which was so important for BAMS Radio.
I would sign up for that, just more peer pressure, just so we're clear.
Gotcha. So Thomas is on board. The other thing I want to address, we'll be selling tickets. Take a number.
I planned on making a day of it, really, not so much for the Fax Cam Grow aspect, but just for broadcasting letters as they came in. But, hey, y'all let me know. I'm available all day that day if needed.
It's for Bama fans, it is kind of a national holiday. It's kind of, you know, it has surpassed Easter and some of the religious holidays, and it's kind of edging up there towards Christmas and Halloween as far as, you know, you got National Signing Day, Halloween, you know, my wife's birthday, like.
Nice politically correct answer there.
Yeah, well, because
yeah,
you know,
I'm not going to prove to be an Easter pal, but it's a good day for Bama fans, okay?
Easter, of course. What are they teaching
at Xavier Methodist?
some of the people who have been with us for a long time, and we do have some insanely loyal listeners, for which we are grateful. But a lot of people, when the news about Paul Fong's status changing, Paul is no longer with WJOX if you've had your head in a fish barrel for the past week. Paul's last day was Monday. He will serve a 3-month non-compete, meaning he will not be on there doing his in any capacity for 3 months. And it has been brought up on multiple occasions by several people who are fans of the show that an appearance on BAM's radio would not violate his non-compete because we're internet radio. It'd be the equivalent of doing a podcast. And we agree. We have emailed Paul and are trying to get him on the show, and that we hope that we will be able to secure a few minutes of the man's time. But, you know, if I were Paul Feinbaum and I had 3 months of no radio show to do and a big fat check that I was waiting on from Cox Radio at 97.3, I think I'd get my ass someplace sunny and drink a couple of adult beverages with umbrellas in them and not pick up the phone, not answer emails, and ignore the rest of the world for a little while. So if we are able to get in touch with Paul, we hope to have him on. I would consider it a long shot at this point. Maybe closer to his return, he may be more motivated to come on and talk about why he left WJOX and Cumulus, but right now I think it's still pretty fresh. And congratulations to Jim Dunaway and Ryan Brown and those guys for moving into Paul's slot. I think it's a good promotion for them. Just desserts for those guys in that they've been veterans around this this scene. I'm going to call Birmingham a scene. Veterans around the media circuit in Birmingham for a long time, and certainly worthy of the promotion. Recruiting.
Yes, we do have a couple of callers on. If we want to bring one on real quick,
let's get to recruiting before we get to callers, because we had, let's face it, it was a star-studded list of folks that were in Tuscaloosa this weekend. And Carrie, I am curious to hear from you if there have been any changes in the status of these, you know, call them 5 to 7. Primary targets of Alabama's coming down the home stretch?
Not officially, no. Most people still think Reuben Foster's going to Auburn, although his mom apparently was very impressed by what Nick Saban had to say about the plan he had for her son. My understanding is that Reuben is afraid that if he commits to or signs with Alabama, that he won't get the help he needs to become eligible from the educators at Auburn High School. Now, I hate to indict those people like that. I don't even know any of them. But I understand that that's one of Reuben's fears. If you were to put a percentage on it right now, it'd probably be 40% Auburn, you know, 30% Alabama, and then a little bit less than that, Georgia. I did hear an interesting interview with Jonathan Allen as I was driving back to church tonight, and Jonathan took a lot of time with Reuben this past weekend and recruited him for Alabama. Feels like he made some progress, but even Jonathan is not ready to make a prediction on what Reuben's going to do, because, quite frankly, I don't think Reuben knows what Reuben's going to do yet. I think he's very torn between Auburn, Alabama, and Georgia. All three of them have worked him very hard. There was a lull for Alabama after he decommitted, but Alabama got back in on him and reestablished the relationship, as very few people not named Kirby Smart can do. But Kirby did do it. And Alabama is in it for Reuben, but I'm not going to go out on a limb right now and say they're going to get Reuben. you know, there were some other visitors there that were very impressed, but I don't think – I guess if there was a momentum swing, I would say it was with Alvin Kamara, running back from Georgia. He was already pretty sold in Alabama. I think Alabama has a lead over Georgia for him right now. Von Bell is another guy that Alabama's got a lead for, but Tennessee is making a big push for Von Bell. We talked about Von a lot on this show, but I think Alabama has sold him on the fact that he can be a cornerback, not necessarily just a safety at Alabama. So that sounds to be pretty smart. Eddie Jackson is a guy we hadn't talked about really at all, and he's kind of come from out of nowhere a wide receiver, defensive back. I think he'd be defensive back at Alabama. And he is really getting swayed to the point that he might be the next commitment. It might be the only commitment between now and signing day. So, yeah, Eddie Jackson needs to be talked about a little bit, an outstanding athlete. Can play safety, can play corner, can play wide receiver. Most people didn't know much about him through his senior year. He's, I guess, what you call a late bloomer, or else somebody that just, you know, didn't get in the limelight for whatever reason. But this is a guy that's probably going to end up on Alabama's list on National Signing Day. As far as other recruits that are kind of on the fence, it appears that Georgia has retaken the lead for Laramie Tunsil. That could change between now and signing day. You know, it's a funny thing about trying to predict what a 17 or 18 year old kid's going to do, because they don't know. But Alabama's done all it can do with Laramie. He wasn't one of the visitors last weekend. He was there weekend before last. But and then Florida State's still a player on him. But Alabama's got a shot. But the ones that Alabama should probably feel best about right now, Blip and Thomas, in my opinion, would be Alvin Kamara and Eddie Jackson and Von Bell. And then if they can get Eddie Vanderdoes to get away from California, there's still a shot there. And, you know, there could be a surprise or two. I don't think so. Eddie Jackson's a surprise to me. I've never heard of the guy. But, you know, there's – and we have learned this week that Bradley Bozeman plans to gray shirt. So that opens up another – position to sign somebody. So there could be as many as six more guys come on board. And let me tell you, you know, if your name's Laramie Tunsil or your name's Reuben Foster, they're going to hold a spot for you on signing day. Trust me, they are. So I can't predict what either one of those kids is going to do, but I can tell you that Alabama is right there in the thick of it. And I think there's more reason to feel positive about Jackson and Kamara and Von Bell, though. That's how I'm seeing it right now, but you guys feel free to chime in if you've heard differently.
Well, before we go to callers, and I'm hoping that callers have recruiting questions as well because we are so close to signing day, but Eddie Jackson, my take on Eddie Jackson is that most considered him a Florida State lock through most of the process. Tim Watts from Bama Online suggested that had Jackson been active on the summer camp circuits, he could very easily be a five-star prospect right now, that there just wasn't a lot of tape out there on the young man, and that Florida State certainly was aware of his talent. But now that some other schools have had a chance to evaluate his senior film, it seems like everybody's trying to get in late, and Nick Saban is the only one that has been successful in catching the young man's ear. So right now, I think the staff feels real good about Eddie Jackson, you know, it's one of those things we had speculated Bozeman may take a gray shirt. Of course, some Bama fans hear that phrase, gray shirt, and bristle a little bit at it because there's some negative connotations. But Bozeman has actually come out and done several interviews, one of which I think was on Tighter Insider Radio with Rodney Orr, where he said, no, I'm totally comfortable with the gray shirt. I'm on board. You know, I injured my knee, still rehabbing. I wasn't going to play this year anyway, so take the gray shirt and have the remaining five to play four. It just gives me the best opportunity to get on the field for as long as possible for the Crimson Tide. So, you know, here is a case where the gray shirt is being perceived as a positive for both parties and kind of a win-win situation, and got to love that.
You can ignore what the
piss on the AJC. And Andy from Perrysburg and all the other oversigning morons. Well, listen, I do want to get to callers, but after we get back from the callers, I want to touch a little bit on this weekend's big junior day at Alabama.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and get our first caller on. I recognize it as our good friend Marty. Marty, you are live with BAMS Radio. What you got for us tonight?
Roll Tide, roll. I'm telling you, what a game last night that was. Unreal.
It was fun.
Oh, I was sitting in the living room, and I felt the energy and the electricity in the state in the arena. It was just awesome. I wanted to just jump right out there in the middle of it. But that's not what I was calling for. I've got a couple questions real quick. One thing is about the new rules that they have passed on the coaches' contact with the recruits. I really don't necessarily understand it exactly right. Is it that the coaches, I heard they could have as many coaches on the road seeing recruits as they needed to. Does that include the head coach also? And does that mean they can have unlimited contact with the recruits? Or is it just unlimited text messaging and mailing to the recruits? And I got one question about how we're going to finish at on the recruiting. Do you know the answer to that new recruiting rule that they passed here recently?
I have to admit that I'm a little fuzzy on the specifics, but the whole point of all those changes was to slim down the NCAA rulebook, and in doing so, they have the staffs that consistently work to recruit, the Nick Saban staff, the coaches that are on the ball. It's going to give them more advantage because they can have more contact. The rule set that basically limited any sort of contact is now gone. Some can harass a prop you want to, even though that won't get them to your school more than likely. So it's just an interesting set of things. We were talking about with being on the road. I believe that's called the pass the baton, where only one or two coaches could be visiting at one time. Now what you're probably going to end up seeing is that, let's take Alabama this year as an example. Alabama wins the BCS championship first week of January, probably January the 7th, probably by January the 10th, it'll just be like coaches everywhere going all over the place constantly, not worrying about that kind of thing. And it's going to be, like I said, a decided advantage towards the staffs, that are full of recruiters. If you're labeled a coach by a staff, particularly it's a place like Alabama, you can go out and recruit, and you will be expected to an entirely different level. As an Alabama fan, I'm okay with it. I hope it doesn't get abused to where kids are getting harassed, but, you know, that's the name. If that's the name of the game, that's the name of the game. Kerry Blip, am I wrong on any of this? If I'm crazy, you're welcome to tell me. I'm used to it at this point.
You are crazy.
I haven't studied it, to be honest with you. I just really just sit back and wait on the next question.
I'm with you.
I think Bruce Pearl might still have a job right now if they have these rules, but hey.
You're right there.
Well,
Mark Hayes might not.
Last question I got for you. How many spots do we actually have? Is it 5, 6, 7? And if you had to pick the most comfortable 4, if we did have 6 slots left, how many, what would be your best 4 that you think you feel really comfortable with right now that we would end up with on signing day?
I'll be glad to take that one. The most comfortable 4, Marty, would be D-liner, Alvin Kamara, and Eddie Jackson, and Von Bell. Those are the most comfortable 4. How many do we have left? Probably 6 or 7. There's a small chance it'll never get put out in the media, but there's a small chance that Rex Jones might pay his son's first semester, Walker, if Alabama needs that scholarship to sign somebody to come on in the summer. But that would mean we would have to make room for somebody like a Reuben Foster, an Eddie Vanderdose, or a Laramie Tunsil. But those 4 I gave you, Marty, Kamara, Jackson, Von Bell, and D-Liner, that's the 4 I feel most confident about right now.
Hey, we couldn't complain about that at all if that happened.
No, sir. No, sir.
But well, guys,
I think there'll be more than 4, Marty. I think there'll be more than 4, but that's the 4 that I could give you a 90 percentile on.
Well, good deal, man. Well, Roll Tide, guys. Y'all have a good one. Appreciate it.
Roll Tide,
appreciate
Marty.
Calling.
Thanks for
Marty.
Calling. There was some speculation. You know, we're actively pursuing D-line specifically. Eddie Vanderdose, D-liner. The kid from Tennessee, Jason Carr, and it sounds like Carr has taken his name out of the hat recently met with Butch Jones, has reaffirmed his commitment to Tennessee and is shutting any future visits down. So we can strike Jason Carr off the list as far as a potential for one of those remaining D-line spots. I would love to know where the staff's head is in regards to Henry Poggy, because I still get the impression that if we pushed for Poggy, that if we made him a priority and showed him the appropriate love, that he could very easily be a part of this class.
It's possible. There's still another visitation weekend. Actually, there's two more. But if Henry came in, Blip, I think it would be on the February 2nd weekend. Michigan is where he's committed now, and Michigan is the king of you shop, we shop. If you visit after you're committed to Michigan, they pull your offer. So Henry's got to be very careful about knowing he's got a written Alabama offer before he comes down here. Now, that being said, his head coach is good friends with Nick Saban, and he is good friends with Cyrus Jones, currently on the Alabama roster. They played together in high school. Henry's father coached Cyrus and Henry both. So where's the staff said is? They want him. They want him bad, man. But they got to get him to visit. And to get him to visit, he's got to be willing to face the fact that that's going to be the pulling of his Michigan offer. So February 2nd would be when he came in, if he came in at all. But let's be clear about the defensive line. They're not giving up on Eddie Vanderdosh yet.
That would be such a
huge deal. There was a rumor he had reaffirmed to USC. That is not correct. His commitment is his recruitment is still open, and Alabama's not out of it by any means with Eddie Vanderdosh right now as we speak at 8:47 p.m. tonight. You know, but on this Wednesday, but it could go a million different ways between now and then. I did see where they offered his, I think, 10th grade sister a basketball scholarship to try to sway him to recommit and all this kind of stuff. But bottom line, Alabama's putting defensive linemen in the NFL, and Eddie knows it, and that door is certainly not closed. And let me be clear, I don't want the world to think I'm giving up on Laramie Tunsil and Reuben Foster. I'm not. Those faxes could come in to Tuscaloosa on signing day. I was just wanting to get Marty, who I felt the strongest about.
Sure.
I have to say, pulling Vanderdoes cross-country would be one of the biggest recruiting coups that I've ever – that has to come up in the past few years. That would be a huge pull.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, he showed out at the Army All-American game against the elite of the elite and certainly looked like he was capable of playing as a true freshman. And let's face it, at the nose, I thought Brandon Ivory played fairly well this year and was competent. But with Jesse Williams leaving, there's opportunity for a superstar to come in and earn that starting job at the nose. So it's got to be appealing for and I keep hearing that we're looking at D-liner as an outside, as a defensive end, not a defensive tackle. So we're considering him more of a pass rusher on the end than a run plugger in the middle with the nose position. So I think we're still looking for that gigantic body in the middle. I know Page has impressed a lot of people, and between Darren Lake and Darius Page, those are two guys that could easily step up and be that next run plugger. But I think the staff would love to take one more, and Vanderdoes certainly fits the bill.
Yeah, and so does Ashawn Robinson, but I just think that Texas is going to be able to hang on to him. My staff wants him really bad. But, yeah, Eddie would have a big role if he came. You're right about Darren Lake. Now, that's a guy that's going to get better every year he's there. Brandon Ivory's not the most talented guy in the world, but, my gosh, he's got a lot of heart. I was watching him some at the championship game. He came in and acquitted himself well when Jesse needed a breather. But, yeah, Eddie's a guy that – Eddie would not redshirt if he came in there. You're right about that, Bleff. He would not be redshirt as a true freshman.
No, and could be the guy at the position depending on how things shake out.
Could be. Depends on Lake's progression in the spring and Brandon Ivory's progression in the weight room. And competition's good, and you're right. I agree with you on D-liner. He's He's more of a Damian Square type of guy. If D played nose guard, he'd probably be on third down in passing situations only. It would not be in the base defense. He would be an end slash tackle. And let's be straight about that now. Other than the nose guard, everybody else plays both end and tackle, okay, depending on if the Jack walks up to the line or not and plays. Because if the Jack walks up to the line, he's a fourth defensive lineman and just really a glorified defensive end. So everybody but the nose guard plays some end and some tackle. But there's a situation in Alabama on third down where a quicker guy comes in at nose guard and rushes the passer on third and long, and that could be a role for Leiter, even if his primary position is on the outside. Page is going to have to add some weight if he's going to have to play on the nose. And he's also going to have to make sure he qualifies. I don't think it's a done deal yet that Page will qualify. I think he's still got a little work to do with Foley, but he's in the right place to get that done.
Does D-liner remind you – I'm going to play the compare and contrast game. Does D-liner remind you a little bit of Kerry Murphy?
He's not maybe a little, yeah. Maybe a little bit.
Not a lot.
Well, I watched Kerry play a lot more than I did D in high school. I only saw D play one game. D reminds me a little bit of Damian Square. Just a little more physically gifted.
Okay. Well, Thomas, have we still got callers holding? Do we need to get some additional phone calls here? And do we need to throw the phone number out in case somebody's wanting to call?
Well, we have one other caller, and if anybody else wants to call in, the number is 714-510-3707. Give us a quick call. We're talking recruiting. If Legend doesn't call in the next few minutes, I would absolutely love to talk about this massive mess the NCAA has gotten themselves into with this Miami investigation.
Oh, boy.
I mean, that is a firestorm of badness. But anyway, I'll go ahead and bring Robert on with us. Hey, Robert, you're on with BAMS. How's it going this evening, buddy?
What up, buddy? How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are
Robert.
You?
Robert.
Hey, Bird, the word. How are you doing, Bird?
Well, Bird's not here today.
Yeah, he's Bird's feeling a little bit sick, so he's taking the night off.
Oh, if you hear my point, Bird, I hope you feel better, poor baby Bird. Poor baby Bird, the word is sick. Ooh.
Hey,
I
Robert.
Love you, Bird.
Hey, Robert, this is Kerry. I wanted to tell you how happy I was to meet you when you came down for the Ole Miss game. I just want to let you know how happy I was to meet you in person, buddy.
I'm so happy to meet with you, Kerry. You've been my body, my rock, my world, man. Do you have a phone number that I can call you and FaceTime you or not?
Yeah, but I can't give it out on the air because I'm afraid all the girls will start calling me.
Well, do you have my email address?
I can get it from Bird. I'll be glad to, buddy.
Okay, buddy. So on comment, I heard that Popeye Mom is out of commission.
He's out of commission for 3 months.
3 months, huh?
Because, Robert, what the deal is in radio is if you're a big name like Paul and you decide to not renew your contract and change jobs and go to another station, they have it in your contract that you have to stay off the radio for a certain amount of time. And for Paul, it was 3 months. So he'll be back in 3 months, and he'll be on a different station in Birmingham. 97.3, the Zone, will be his new home starting in April, Robert.
In April?
But he'll also be coming back on Sirius.
Do you know when he might be on Sirius?
Sometime around April the 20th, that time frame.
April 20th. So April 3rd, he's going to go to 97.3.
That's right.
On April 20th, I can still be hearing him on the iHeartRadio on 97.3, huh?
That's right. Sometime around the 20th, 21st of April. That's right, Robert.
Hey, if you hear my Paul Feinbaum, if you hear my voice, I met you. I never forget you. I met you. I would like for you to maybe have a soul so I can hear you. I miss hearing you. So Carrie and everybody, I would like to talk to you about Northern Iowa.
About Northern Iowa, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, what you think about Northern Iowa? I heard Northern Iowa they do good Southern Illinois tonight.
Yeah, the game has been going on for a little while. I'm trying to get you a score. I'm looking, trying to help you out here, Robert. I did see that, looking at their schedule, they just beat Drake earlier this week, so that's always good. They ran their record over 500. Okay, I'm looking at the score right now, I think, and it's 7:20 left in the second half. Southern Illinois is down 52-35 to Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa's putting a pretty good whooping on them.
Can I say one more thing about Paul Feinbaum?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I know he's not gonna quit that way or quit it, but I'm hoping he's not gonna quit that way or bend for good. I'm hoping he can be on BAM Radio Network. If you or Carrie might get him BAM Radio Network, I would like to hear from him.
Well, I think because he just ended his contract, he's kind of laying low for a little while. But we'll see. I don't think he'll be on next week, but he can come on because we're not – BAM's is internet, so it's different markets. We'll try and get him on, but we definitely understand that he just got out of that contract, and we're going to kind of let him take his vacation.
I know, believe you me, I do want him to be on that week or the other week. I want him to stay low for a while, and maybe if he wants to talk to BAM Radio on, maybe if he can come on some other time, try to get him on some other time because I would like to. I miss hearing his voice.
Well, we have emailed Paul, and I'm sure Robert, you are all over Twitter, and I'm sure that if we do get him on, we're going to be tweeting everybody about about when he will be on the air. So we'll certainly let you know via Twitter, so that you can call in and talk to your buddy Paul for a few minutes.
Okay, that's good, man. That is really good. Well, I know that you have a other cutter on the other line, so damn time, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Robert.
Thanks for calling, Robert. We appreciate it. Hey, guys, we got a pretty big junior day coming up. I don't know if we need to take a break yet or not, but I've got some names I'd like to throw out of 11th graders who are going to be in Tuscaloosa this weekend whenever we have time for that before I drop off.
Well, with Legend Island coming up soon, why don't we hold off on a break and let's do some junior day stuff?
Okay. Sounds good.
Well, there's a lot of guys coming. But I'm going to give you just a few of the names, and some of these names are people you've heard of and some of them people you hadn't heard of. First, let me say that Marlon Humphrey, the great cornerback from Hoover, is not going to be able to make it. I believe Marlon has a track meet this weekend, so he will not be there. But here's some names that will be at Junior Day. This is not a complete list. If I gave you the complete list, we'd probably be talking until 9:30. But I'm going to give you a partial list of guys that are going to be there. this Saturday in Tuscaloosa for Junior Day. Now, this is the first of several Junior Days Alabama's going to host. This is number one. Brandon Dawkins, a four-star cornerback, quarterback from Westlake Village, California. He's a 2014 kid. All of these are 2014 kids. Rock Thomas, the running back we've talked about many times on here from Oxford High. Cameron Robinson, a very good offensive lineman from West Monroe High School in Louisiana. I don't know if he knows the Robertson family from Duck Dynasty, but he might know them. Nick Chubb, four-star running back from Cedartown, Georgia. Nick Glass, a four-star safety from Peachtree Ridge in Suwanee, Georgia. Ronnie Clark, a rising star at Calera High School in Alabama, who can play safety, he can play corner, he can play wide receiver. Here are just a few other names. I'm not going to give you the whole list, but Kevin Crosby, a four-star athlete, can play line positions from Bamberg, South Carolina. Cortez McDowell, a safety from Locust Grove, Georgia. Damari Kitt, a four-star wide receiver from Sandy Creek High in Georgia, Tyrone, Georgia, to be specific. Now, here's a big name to remember. Orlando Brown, a massive offensive tackle from Peachtree Ridge High in Duluth, Georgia. And Bryson Allen Williams, who Nick Saban visited in person today, guys, at his school. He's going tomorrow. Nick Saban and Kirby Smart will be at Cedar Grove High School tomorrow in Elkhorn, Georgia, to visit four-star defensive end Bryson Allen Williams. And then finally, one of my favorite guys on this list, because I've seen him play, DeMarcus Bingham, a wide receiver from Foley High School in Alabama. The last wide receiver Alabama signed from Foley ended up doing pretty well, both for Alabama and the NFL. Now, DeMarcus Bingham is built a whole lot like Julio Jones, but to be frank, after watching him play, and I don't mean this as a slight at DeMarcus, his game reminds me a little bit more of Kevin Norwood. And as they say on Seinfeld, not that there's anything wrong with that. So DeMarcus really likes Bama, and he'll be at Junior Day this weekend as well. That's about maybe a little more than half the guys are actually going to be there. But I just wanted to throw those names out because this is a very huge event in Tuscaloosa every year, and they'll have at least one more of these in the next couple of months.
Well, the volume of information at this time of year that we sort through and the number of interviews with 18 and 17 year olds that we all read is bordering on silly sometimes. So some of this stuff tends to run together. I forget who it was that I read an interview with, but I do remember the what I took away from it, what stuck with me, was that he said that Humphrey said that he was coming. Humphrey said that he was basically all Bama. We've had an embarrassment of riches at cornerback in just the past 3 or 4 years. I mean, think about five-star number one cornerback in the nation, Dre Kirkpatrick, five-star D. Milliner, some super elite talent. There are some who would tell you that Humphrey is better than both Kirkpatrick and Milliner at the cornerback position. And a year or two of coaching under Saban's tutelage, he's going to be something special.
I'm one of those. I'm one of those that would tell you that. And that's coming from someone that saw all three of them play in high school. Going into his senior year at Hoover, which he is, Marlon is better right now than Dre was as a sophomore at Alabama. Right now.
Wow.
Good Lord.
And I would say that if his name was Marlon Smith. I love Bobby Humphrey to death. He was a great player at Alabama, but Marlon stands on his own merit. He is the prototypical Nick Saban cornerback. About 6'1", about 185, 190, about a 4.4 and a 40, great hips, great lateral movement, very aggressive, very aggressive. If you want to know how aggressive Marlon Humphrey is, talk to a guy named Reggie Ragland, who was put at receiver on a third down play at Hoover last year and caught it and, well, had a little down and out thrown to him. And when the ball got there and Marlon got there, it was brutal. And you didn't want to be Reggie at that time in your life. Marlon laid the wood on him. Separated him from the ball. It wasn't a fumble because he didn't have clean possession. But, 95% of high school cornerbacks could have made that same hit and Reggie would have held onto the ball. But let me tell you, he blocks kicks. He runs back kicks. He intercepts balls and runs them back. He locks down the other team's best receiver. There's just not anything bad you can say about Marlon Humphrey as a cornerback. And like I said, I would say this if his name was Marlon Jones or Marlon Johnson or Marlon Smith. Marlon is awesome. And Alabama's probably going to get Marlon. Nothing at all should be read into him not being able to make it down Saturday. Chances are extremely high that he'll come to the next junior day they have, which will probably be at one of the February home basketball games.
Marlon has told folks that he's coming. So whether or not he's a verbal commit, it seems, and we shouldn't take it for granted because everybody in the country, every elite program is going to try to sway him. But the fact that his daddy played for Alabama, the fact that he kind of grew up a Crimson Tider, and the fact that Nick Saban coaches his position, I think everybody should feel pretty good about our chances. And I'd be curious to know, this 2012 class, or I guess it's the 2013 class, isn't it? This 2013
yeah.
class looks like it could be better than the 2008 class. There are some who would tell you that the 2014 cycle, that the juniors that you just rattled off the names of, that may be a stronger overall group as far as talent nationally. Now, whether Alabama has the kind of success that we've had this year with next year's crop remains to be seen. But a lot of the experts would tell you that the 2014 group is even more talented than 2013.
You could make an argument for that, but I think I should be able to speak for all Alabama fans in that I quit worrying about recruiting in January of 2007 because I knew that they had hired the guy that was going to give them a top five class every year. And it's real fun to follow recruiting and try to guess where kids are going to go and all that. Bottom line, 3 out of 4 and very likely 4 out of 5 national championships is what it's all about. And if you're getting that, what difference does it make if you find that stud pass rushing defensive end or that huge playmaking wide receiver? Because everything, it all boils down to W's and L's and crystal footballs. And there's no sign that any of that's going to stop. And there's no sign that top five and, in most cases, top three recruiting classes are going to stop. People use the argument, Book and Thomas, that at some point there's going to be an embarrassment of riches and kids are going to be too intimidated to come to Alabama because they're afraid they're not going to play because they're a junior, whatever. But there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence of that. If anything, more people like Eddie Vanderdoes in California are listening now than they ever have. So, and the great kid that you want to come into your program is the one who's not afraid of competition, who doesn't care how many five stars you sign his position. A great example is Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara doesn't give two craps about how many running backs Alabama signs. He wants to come. Now, not saying Georgia might not sneak back in and get him. It's possible. Anything's possible. But kids like that, that aren't afraid of competition, it's fun to follow recruiting. But as long as they got the guy in charge, they got in charge of it right now, I'm not going to sweat it because I know that the rest of the time he's there, he's going to keep pulling in the top five classes. And unlike certain other schools, no names mentioned, Lee County, Alabama, he actually develops his players. He's got the crystal footballs to prove it. Word?
Amen, brother.
He's preaching, folks. He's preaching. Well, I have to say, you know, not to pour onto that. I completely agree. It's not. It's fun to. It's instead of being something to worry about as an Alabama fan, it's just fun. Like, what crazy coup can Nick Saban pull to get some kid like Eddie Vanderdoes? I've said it once. I'll say it again. You're asking a kid to come cross country in. You know, you're pulling them out of USC and UCLA's backyard. USC with Lane Kiffin is on the downgrade, but UCLA is not a horrible program. You know, you're pulling away from local programs that are not horrible, and he wants to go for the competition. And something you're going to keep hearing from recruits is they want to win, and that's why Alabama is getting so much so much love from recruits across the country. So, I mean, it's fun. It's fun to be an Alabama fan, and it's not going to stop. I do completely agree with you that 4 out of 5 is a pretty legitimate possibility this year, but that's way beyond anything I want to get into right now.
Well, I think most of the people that listen to this type of show are the types that obsessively follow. I mean, we all feel like we've got a pretty decent handle on Alabama's recruiting and could probably name at any given time, you could probably rattle off 10 names of high school kids that we're talking to. College football fan is wired that way. And what's fun about it is, and Kerry, you mentioned January of 2007. And, you know, you get to this stage where we're T-minus 2 weeks to signing day and counting. Most of the people that spend half of their workday on the blogs reading the message boards, you know, you feel like you got it figured out. And harken back to January of 2007, when a lot of recruitniks were going, Kareem who? Oh, yeah, he ended up having a pretty decent career. Was he a first round or a second? He was a first round draft pick by the Texans, wasn't he? Yeah. Yeah, Nick did okay on that one. And this Eddie Jackson story reminds me so much of 2007 and Kareem who? You know, a lot of people right now are going, Eddie who? What? And now you've got Tim Watts going, yeah, if he'd been on the circuits, you know, if he'd gone to all these summer camps and got his film up, this kid could easily have been a star. And you just go, wait, what? We're 2 weeks and counting. And now out of nowhere, Tim Williams, same way. I mean, Tim Williams wasn't a name we were talking about all season long. And then all of a sudden, kablooey.
Well, but Blip, I knew who Tim Williams was. I just thought he was going to LSU. I didn't know who Eddie Jackson was. Shame on me, but I didn't know who he was until Alabama got involved late.
And
I knew who the other 95% of the people on the board were.
Well, sure. Absolutely. Man, I love recruiting. I love following recruiting. I wish so badly that we could get this excited about basketball recruiting, but not to say that we're done with the two signees we've got with Hale and Jimmy Taylor. But
no, there's going to be at least one more, probably a guard, probably a point guard. Not sure what's going on with Retton right now, but Retton hasn't played in the last couple of games, so I think there'll be at least one more, Blip. And I've read some names. I don't have them memorized, I'll be honest with you. But Grant was actually out to see a guard that's a junior this year that, you know, will be possibly part of the class. I'm not a junior, a senior this year. He was out to see a guard, I believe, in New York very recently. So it's not over with. I will say there will be at least one signee in the late period for Alabama basketball, at least one, possibly two, but there will be at least a guard in there. And maybe a junior college big man, but I don't have any names yet. So it's a lot harder to find out information about Alabama basketball recruiting than it is Alabama football recruiting. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. But that being said, you know, they signed two very good big men that are going to be pretty instant contributors. And I do look for another guard to come in this class in the late period. There's two or three names out there. Probably something we could touch on closer to the late period in April. But
I hope so.
Scouting is going on. And Grant's heavily involved with the best junior point guard in the whole state of Alabama, maybe the Southeast, Justin Coleman of Winona. Grant's been to a couple of his games. Hipsher was at his game last week at Hoover. And Grant's been to a couple of Winona practices. Bear Wilson from Winona committed to Mississippi State in football, and he's also going to play basketball there. So that may give them a little bit of an in, but Grant's got a great relationship with the Winona coaching staff and with Justin Coleman. And even though he's only a junior this year, he's not going to be able to help anybody next year. Justin Coleman is literally Chris Paul trapped in Antoine Petway's body. He's that good. So I can tell you that much about Alabama basketball recruiting. They're in the top two or three for the top junior point guard in the Southeast, Justin Coleman of Winona.
Be exciting. And T. Riley is going to be gone by the time he's on campus. So job is,
that's
is
correct. That's
open.
Correct. He can be told that he will come in and be the point guard, and that's big. Remember Bobby Crimmins used to do that, Blip. He'd go up to New York City every two or three years and find him a guy he could promise would come in and start as a true freshman. So worked out pretty well for Bobby at Georgia Tech, you know, Kenny Anderson and some of those guys. So it can be done. But, yeah, there'll be at least one more signee in this Alabama recruiting basketball class. I can tell you that much, at least one more.
Yeah. I want to remind people listening to the show tonight that we do keep BAMS Radio, BAMSradio.com. We do keep that chat room that is open for the as a portion of the forums. We do keep that open 24/7. If you want to hop in, there's usually somebody in that chat room willing to talk Bama football, basketball, or just shoot the poop in general. So I want to remind people to sign up for the forums and participate in that chat room. It's something that helps us pass the time in some of the quieter periods when we're, you know, everybody's kind of looking at their watch now going, okay, when's A-Day game coming up? And got the NFL draft. That'll be exciting. But not a lot to talk about on the football front in a very quiet time outside of recruiting. We are talking to several people as far as guests for the show coming up. That's another place that would love to have everybody listening tonight on the forums shooting us ideas as far as people who you'd like to hear on BAMS Radio. We mentioned that we'd reached out to Paul Feinbaum. We've also reached out as far as the basketball program is concerned. Want to try and have Brian Passink on again. He's a friend of the show, has been on BAMS Radio a couple of times, and always good to hear Brian's insight on one of those Wednesdays where the Crimson Tide is off and not matched up against somebody. So we're looking to get Brian on again sometime in the very near future. And then a couple of either juniors or seniors who will be playing in the NFL next year, we've got phone calls into. I know Eddie Lacy is somebody that we hope to have on in the near future, but as with all things, no promises. But a lot of phone calls and emails going out, trying to get some things lined up to spice the show up a little bit so that you don't have to listen to me just gush over recruiting for 2 hours straight.
Hey, Bill, speaking of recruiting, a little bit of other news. I meant to mention this earlier, but junior wide receiver Drake Harris of Grand Rapids, Michigan, currently committed to Michigan State, has now got an Alabama offer. This is one of the top junior wide receivers in the country. So he seems to be very, very interested in visiting, and Bobby Williams has been up to see him, and he's very respectful of Coach Saban. So he's 6'4", 175. He also plays basketball, but he plans to just play football in college. So if you – not necessarily this weekend, but maybe the next junior day, don't be surprised to see Drake Harris of Grand Rapids, Michigan, popping in on the Tuscaloosa campus.
Boy, don't you get the impression, you know, you could take just about any position on the roster, with maybe the exception of the offensive line, where I think we need to have a very strong recruiting cycle. But to me, you could just about take any other position, and I just feel like Alabama could take next year off, and we'd still be in great shape. I mean, look at what we'd have coming back at wide receiver with Robert Foster, Amari Cooper, Chris Black. I mean, and those are either incoming freshmen or will be sophomores. Just astounding the quality and the depth that we have, running back, wide receiver, tight end. I mean, OJ's coming in at tight end as an incoming freshman. I think we could just about take the year off and be totally fine.
Yeah, it'd be really cool to see how Alabama uses OJ Howard. This is a guy that could play tight end, wide receiver, slot receiver, you know, line up on the end of the line and block punts and field goals. It's going to be really cool to see how they how they use that kid. I'm really curious to know about that. Really, really curious to know. And, you know, if the great thing about it, Blip, is eight or nine of these guys are going to be able to find out a little bit about it A-Day.
So, right.
It's going to be cool to see how the early enrollees do, of which OJ is one.
You know,
I think it would be easy to envision how we would use OJ under Jim McElwain's system, because you could just sort of speculate and slot him into that Brad Smelly type of role where, you know, we'd roll Brad out into the flat and he would start in one formation, sort of, you know, transformer move into another, and the next thing you know, he's backfield, the next thing you know, he's on the line in the tight end traditional, next thing you know, he's out in the slot. So under McElwain, you had a pretty good idea of what we would see with OJ. I'm not as clear with how Nuss will use him, and I think that Nussmeier is going to have to change, not dramatically, but he is going to have to update his system a little bit to take full advantage of his athleticism.
Well,
yep, he's a stud.
You mentioned the early enrollees, and I just want to jump in. I said I was at the parade and all that. It was shocking to me that if I didn't realize who the early enrollees were, what they looked like, I'm not sure I would have known the difference between them and the returning lettermen that were in the parade. It was very, very surprising to me just because I hadn't seen these people face to face. And these kids, I mean, Derrick Henry just looks like he's ready to kill somebody. He's just ready to go. So
he is.
Oh, man.
He is.
He probably wishes he could
go against Manti Te'o on a one-on-one tackling situation, but that won't happen.
Now, can I be a little bit of a bammer here and express some crimson butthurt? I can't believe it. It breaks my brain that Rivals.com updated their top 100 for their final rankings and did not give Derrick Henry a fifth star. How do you not give Derrick Henry a fifth star?
Maybe you're blind in one eye and can't see out the other. I don't know. Maybe you're piss poor evaluating kids.
Maybe you've got an axe to grind with Lutch.
If you're the all-time high school running back, you know, rushing leader, and you don't get a fifth star, then whoever's evaluating you needs to probably just get a job at McDonald's or something.
But it's not just
Walmart,
that, Kerry. It's not just that. You know, I get it. The question of what position will he play at the collegiate level was a legitimate one. He answered that question in the Army All-American Bowl when he toted the rock and looked amazing at running back against the elite of the elite. You know, they shift a lot of those rankings at the end of the year based on those All-American games, based on the All-Star games. How'd you do against the best in the country? Well, guess what? At his chosen position at running back, he exceeded expectations. After watching that game, how do you not give him a fifth star unless there's just some crazy Bama bias?
I can't answer that.
You have a good point.
I answered it. It's a Bama bias. They're pissed off at Lucky.
Well, I mean, one good reason, I don't know. It really, that does confuse me. He broke a record that stood for 50 years, and then he was the offensive MVP of probably, on balance, the most prestigious of the high school All-America games. I'm confused. I'm as confused as you are, but at the same time, I don't really care. If Alabama wins another mythical recruiting national championship, great. If they don't, great. Derrick Henry is going to be knocking heads together for 3 years at minimum for Alabama. That's all that really matters to me. I do understand your frustration, though, because it's confusing as hell.
Now, well, if you said Lucky, now Lucky is 24/7. He's not Rivals. Which one are we talking about?
We're talking about Rivals, and I think that Lucky taking Bama online away from the Rivals network, I still think there's some people at the Yahoo organization that harbor ill will.
Aptly named Yahoo. Aptly named. Yahoo! What's up? Well, look, Derrick Henry's a stud, and he's a running back, and he's going to show that to everybody in creation in the next 3 years. And can I, now, unfortunately, I was kind of en route from media day to a local restaurant in an effort to watch the All-Star game, and I didn't see, but I guess the fourth quarter. But I can tell you this, after the final touchdown, everybody at my table was a banner, and we were all hoping that on a two-point conversion that they'd pitch the ball to Derrick Henry, and they did. And can I tell you, that linebacker for the other team, he didn't want none of that. He didn't want none of Derrick Henry coming around that end of him. He kind of just crumpled and got ran over, and it was 2 points for Derrick's team. I thought that hilarious. That two-point play was hilarious, that conversion.
You're going to see that a lot over the next 3 years, and I am happily okay with that.
It was, Thomas, it was like, man, Ty, I tell you, I was trying to tackle Eddie Lacy. I mean, that linebacker, he didn't want none of Derrick Henry. Let me tell you, he wanted zero of that. I just laughed. There was a former high school coach at my table, and we just chuckled because, I mean, Derrick came around that end full speed on that two-point conversion, nothing but that linebacker between him and the goal line. And we just started laughing because, I mean, it was like the guy was like, do I have to do this? And, of
Olay.
Course, he got trucked. Olay is like a truck, you know, Mack truck. But, yeah, I don't know how anybody could not give that guy 5 stars. You'd have to be a moron. But, hey, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the world's
full. It's me being a Bammer. I want as many 5 stars in the class as possible. Let's take a quick break. I think Thomas maybe has to go take a potty break, so we'll run a commercial real quick so that he can relieve himself, and we'll be back and talk some more Bammers.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun, and it's been
Welcome back to BAM's Radio. Taking an extended jam here towards the end of the show. I am Blip with your square peg, round hole partners, Thomas Watts and Kerry Clark. Three of the four horsemen of the BAM's apocalypse, and do want to say thank you to the several listeners who emailed or called or texted when they found out here in Birmingham the Jocks Roundtable guys from 10 to 2 o'clock would be taking Feinbaum's old slot. The number of people calling me or calling the station to advocate BAM's Radio get that 10 to 2 slot, y'all are very kind, and the thought is certainly appreciated. Also wanted to relay a message from Bama Bird. Several of you have been keeping up with him on Facebook and Twitter and know that he's going through chemo and a tough time. He's doing very well. Round three of chemo today, and the medicine appears to be doing what it's supposed to do. So Bama Bird wanted to let everybody that has kept him in thoughts and prayer give everybody a big thumbs up and let y'all know that we certainly appreciate y'all doing that.
Got some more Senior Bowl news, guys.
Bring it on.
A former Bammer who has a national championship ring from 2009 but opted to take his career to South Alabama, a defensive back, B.J. Scott, has been named as a late replacement in the South secondary. So couldn't happen to a nicer kid. He helped open those floodgates in Mobile to help us get guys like Julio Jones and Mark Barron and all that by committing to Nick Saban pretty early. So shout out to B.J. Scott, who was named just in the last hour or so as a late replacement on the South Senior Bowl roster. His program, it'll say South Alabama, but he was one of us for a couple of years, and we appreciate what he did to help Alabama reestablish itself in Mobile.
Now, the message board troll in me wants to ask, is this going to be his breakout game?
Oh, that's not nice. Maybe he'll make him some.
Wow. That was brutal.
I will say, and this has been said on before, but it deserves repeating. When pair recruiting classes, Scott was in that big 2008 class, and most every class has a recruiter of some sort, a recruiter that, you know, he's the guy, he commits early, and he brings a bunch of guys with him. Scott was that guy. So if you want to give an inordinate amount of credit to one recruit in that class that actually didn't do a lot on the football field, Scott absolutely fits that definition. So, you know, just give the guy, I know I'll be tweeting about the game because I'll be there. I'll watch him real close just because he's a former Bama guy. So follow me on Twitter and I'll sunshine pump about the young man.
and would love to see him earn a paycheck in the league, by the way.
That would be great, you know. Worst comes to worst, he can always join Simeon Castile in the Arena League in Orlando. Simeon seems to be enjoying that life. So, hey, it's still football.
I'm pulling up. I'm going up to the basketball schedule. People trying to dissect the remaining schedule and figure out where we're going to end up. Sometimes it's laughable to me, you know, people trying to figure out how many wins it's going to take for us to get in and say, well, you know, I really think we can go 10-2 down the stretch and Ole Miss is a winnable game. And boy, I hear you. You know, I really do. I feel you on the sunshine pumping and trying to get behind the team. I just don't know that I can get that excited about the remaining schedule. So let me see if I can find the remaining schedule and let's break down wins and losses, where we expect to end up here. So bear with me while I scroll through ESPN.com's schedule. Next game is going to be at Tennessee, a team we've already beaten this year, but only by a 3-point margin.
We weren't playing as well then when we beat them by those 3 points, but they're a lot tougher team at home. And Stokes had a terrible game against Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I don't expect that to happen again. That being said, Musa and Nick have stepped their games up. That's a 50-50 game, but I can't
that
call
really
it.
Is a toss-up. Following that with a game next Thursday on January 31 at home against Arkansas. Arkansas is a little bit soft this year. That's a W. We turn around on the 3 days later, play on a Thursday night, and by the way, a late tip, a 9 p.m. Eastern time tip Thursday night, then turn around Saturday and play an afternoon game in Nashville at Vandy. Boy, I'd like to have your confidence and optimism on that one, Kerry, but
well,
I'm going to have to.
I didn't watch any of it, but I understand that Vandy beat the living hell out of Auburn tonight, so they're playing a little better. I'm going to go 50-50 on that one.
Yeah,
on which guy. If the Alabama that showed up in Starkville shows up, we'll kill them.
Yeah.
But this is not a good Vandy team, though. You know, Alabama will have to play down to their level.
Two coin toss games, and then the following game at Auburn. I'm going to put on my crimson color glasses and chalk that one as a win. Following game at home versus LSU. That's a very, very winnable game. That's a W. Following game at Georgia, a softer than usual Georgia squad this year, so we'll call that a W. At home against South Carolina, and I have to tell you, if that was at South Carolina, that's a very respectable, solid South Carolina squad this year. The fact that it's at Coleman Coliseum, we're going to take that as a W. We've got Mississippi State coming to Coleman the following game. That's a W. At LSU in Baton Rouge, I feel like that's a game at a 1:30 afternoon tip on a Saturday. Feel like we can win that game. Auburn coming to Tuscaloosa, that's a W. So, you know, we could string off starting with the at Auburn. You know, we realistically could win 7 conference games in a row there. And if we win at Vandy, it could be 9.
Well, I'm not as confident as you are about the game at Auburn because I know how spurty they are. My confidence level on that game is only probably 75-25.
Okay. Now, we closed the season with a murderer's row. The last 3 games of the season, at Florida, at Ole Miss, and then hopefully close it out with a W at home against Georgia. But those back-to-back
games. Right there.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's the LLW to close it out.
If we can steal one of those. So we've got, Kerry, we're saying coin toss 50-50 at Tennessee, coin toss 50-50 at Vandy. Let's say we win one of those 2 games, lose to Florida, lose to Ole Miss. Does that get us in? If we lose 3 conference games the rest of the
year. you'd be 14-4 in the league. That gives you 23 wins before you ever get to Nashville.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get to Nashville with 21 wins. So 23 would be outstanding. The problem is this is such a down year for the SEC. I don't even know that 14-4 would get you in when you have losses to Tulane, Mercer, and Dayton. I don't know that it would. I think you might even still have to win at least 1 in Nashville. But it would get you a bye in Nashville, and byes are nice.
Yeah.
Hard to say, man. I don't think the SEC is going to get more than 3 or 4 teams this year. And some of those pre-conference losses, I don't know. 14-4 would be great. Might be a little too optimistic. I'm probably more along the 12-6 club. But if they go 14-4, they'd give them 23 before Nashville and get maybe at least 1 in Nashville. It'd be hard to turn them away at 24 with the schedule they played. It'd be hard to turn them away.
And we'd certainly be in the bubble conversation. I mean, we would be one of the teams.
Oh, we're in that now. We're in that conversation now, Bill.
You know what? I think we can play ourselves out of it.
Certainly can.
You know,
and off the bubble.
Yeah. 12-6,
14-4. Probably in 12-6. You have to probably do some more work in Nashville. My opinion.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
And 13-5, probably have to win at least one in Nashville. I hate to say that because in years past, 13-5 in the SEC, they'd be begging you to come to the NCAA tournament. But
yeah.
This SEC this year, I don't even know how to put it in a nice way. It's poor. I mean,
well,
it's basically Florida, Missouri, and the 12 wannabes.
Well, you could make an argument for Ole Miss a little bit.
I should have mentioned them. I'm sorry.
The one that sticks out to me is VCU just running us out of the gym. I mean, VCU beat us by 20 points.
I know. I was there. That hurt. But that's not as bad as losing at home to Mercer and Dayton and Tulane. I'm sorry. You can't do that. You can't. Should have won at least two of those three. Really should have won all three of them.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at, probably a lock if you go 14-4. But I got to think 14-4 would be a pretty big statement, even in a down year for the league, because that's going to give you some pretty good road wins. We don't hardly ever play good in the Tad Pad, and this is Andy Kennedy's best team, and he's got a kid that's like Rex Chapman Jr., on his team. Those last three games is definitely LLW. And we're fortunate to be able to play Georgia twice this year. And I believe we play LSU twice, or do we not? I can't remember. Maybe it's just once.
We do. We get Auburn twice, Georgia twice, LSU twice.
Auburn is, I understand that Vanderbilt beat the living hell out of them tonight. I didn't get to watch any of it. Kentucky did the other night, but Auburn's legs were dead that night. I didn't expect Auburn to beat Kentucky, even at Auburn. And it kind of makes it look better that we did beat them. But the problem with Auburn is they've got a couple of guys that if they get hot behind the arc, they can keep them in a game, even though their defense is really not very good. But they've got some guys. Frankie Sullivan is one. But they've got some others that can really shoot the rock on given nights. Now, I think they were over Kentucky. Or maybe only made 1-3 and it was in garbage time Saturday night. Auburn's kind of a funny team to try to explain. But I'll say this much for Grant. If Mikel Torrance, who at the time was the SEC's leading free throw shooter, hadn't choked on a late 1-1, Grant would be undefeated against Auburn right now. And so he knows how to beat Auburn. But I feel like that will kill them at home. But the game on the road down at Auburn, you just don't know how those guys, Frankie Sullivan and them, are going to be hitting on their threes that night. If we can defend the perimeter that night like we did in Starkville and a couple other times, and I feel like we defended it pretty well last night, but if we can defend the perimeter that night in Auburn the way I know we're capable of, we can sweep them. But this is not as bad of an Auburn team as the one we played last year. Let me be very frank about that.
It would be hard to be as bad as last year's Auburn team.
But this is an Auburn team blip that only lost by 2 to Illinois.
They're capable.
So they can scare you, but our team can show up and show out too, and they've shown that, and they've shown it on a more consistent basis than has Auburn. So I'm going to go 75-25 confidence on that one. And I'm going to go 50-50 confidence on the road games in Nashville and Knoxville. But listen, if they can steal that one this Saturday, they're putting themselves in very good shape for the stretch run.
Man, we're so thin with the injuries. Every game we play, every time we take the floor, you pray. Please let us stay healthy. Please,
Lord. Can I tell you, there was a few people whose hearts skipped a few beats last night when Lacy got hit on that late layup.
I was one of them. The way he was hollering, you'd have thought both his kneecaps popped out his legs.
I've never been happier in my life to hear somebody only had cramps.
You don't know my wife.
Oh!
Oh, you can tell
it's late for some Tylenol PMS, Mr. Will.
Did I mention that my wife does not listen to the show?
I would have hazarded that guess.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the Auburn game that you speak of on the road is Wednesday, February 6th, which is signing day. So if y'all listening to the show tonight, if you haven't had enough of Alabama by the time we hit the airwaves 8 o'clock, if we don't go on early for coverage, by the end of that day, you certainly will have had ample opportunity to Bama up.
All right.
Well, if we ladies,
decide to do if we decide to do wall to wall that day, I'll be available.
I will let you know. Ladies, I don't know that there's a lot that we can cover in this last 10 minutes, so I'd just as soon call it a show, wrap it right here, and welcome everybody back next week for our T-minus 7 days and counting episode. Hopefully Bama Bird will be feeling better and we'll be back. As I mentioned to Robert, if there are going to be any kind of premier guests on the show, we will certainly notify everybody on the BAMS radio message boards, in the chat room, and of course via Twitter and Facebook. Any parting shots before we wrap the show, gentlemen?
I really think Joshua should have called tonight.
Well, we did have one caller that we left on hold for a while who I think came and went, so that may very well have been Jocelyn.
Oh, really? Well, she's still listening. Roll Tide, Josh.
I blame Thomas. How about that?
That's typical.
All right. Well, Roll Tide, everybody, and we will see you guys next week for another BAMS Radio.
Roll Tide.